Okay, so let's just segue. Okay, before we get around to telling somebody else, all these other folks, somebody else's title, we are
We are
Intriguing Creativity with
Intriguing Creativity with Steve Smolinski and
Tom Trimbath.
Tom Trimbath.
And we were just as anybody who's done anything like this knows, there's always a conversation that actually starts up before you hit record. And before we forget, we wanted to make sure we're just talking about a friend of ours, Holly Thomas, who's got a blog out about travels of a gregarious hermit. And the gregarious hermit is just so apropos for her. But she's
Yes,
also.
and she sends it out regularly based on the travels she's doing all around the world. And we highly recommend Travels of a Gregarious Hermit. You take a look at it when you get a chance.
And the other, and because one of the things that she's done, she there's a lot of folks who have been talking about moving to other countries and things like that, since the election. She's been investigating places just because she wanted to investigate other places. And of course, that doesn't mean has to be exotic. Sometimes it is, well, she came back to Whidbey Island for a little while, that kind of thing. But the other thing is, you were waving around, they're not going to see this because it's a podcast, not video, but the book that she did. So, what's the title of the book?
Yes, some time ago, Holly, who is a quite amazing writer and presenter about interesting things such as her travels and so forth, she wrote a poetry book. And it's really cool. It's very unusual. It's not like any poetry book that you've ever read, I'm pretty sure. And you'll understand why I say that when I read you what the title of this book is. It's called Pluck Another Apple, Eve, and Finish It. It's the title of her poetry book.
And
And that's
I've enjoyed her poetry, especially. I can't remember exactly what she's got, which ones she put into the book, because of course every poet has got more poems than are going to end up in any book. But I've always enjoyed the fact that she somehow finds a way to incorporate, of course, the sort of deep thoughts that you want to have in poetry with quantum mechanics. Which, of course, I consider that to be deep thoughts as well. But anyway, it's as much as you've got all this background in business, and I've got this background in technology and whatnot. We both know so many folks who are backgrounds in the arts of various types, which is downright entertaining. Also, much more stylish than you or I. So, aside from that, though, sir, I assume that you haven't been traveling.
No. Since I had my little problems with my body, deciding that I had gotten to the age when my body had decided it should get a little calmer and doing the things that my body used to enable me to do easily. So I have cut down on the travel because it's pretty traumatic stuff to do these days. And my body was telling me there's only so much you should be doing because you got to be an old guy. I was kind of offended by my body explaining that to me, and letting me know that I shouldn't be trying to do as many activities, such as this one, for example, as I do, and other kinds of things where I advise CEOs of companies and so forth, which is a much more aggressive kind of period of time that I was putting in. So it's been an interesting thing to go into old guyhood. And recognized like, and I will tell you that luckily I have not gotten to 100 and something yet, so I haven't gotten to that old guyhood yet, but I've gotten up there as numbers start to come closer, you know, the 100 number, it causes you to start thinking about old guyhood and what old guyhood really means to you and what you should be thinking about and anything that you want to get done while you still have an ability to get it done, you know? Yeah. So I offer that to all of you that, you know, before you get to the point where your friends come to you and say, by the way, I just want you to know you're an old guy now. No, you are not going to be doing these things with us anymore because, you know, your body just doesn't want to do those things with us the way it used to. And so you get to watch that. So
but you know,
age of watcherhood.
But you know, so, I've got, you know, a trip coming up next week.
Yes.
And one of the ways I'm going to accommodate that trip is by taking the train. Because
go.
I'm going to go cross country, and in the past I've driven. Of course, you can always fly. But I realize that if I drive, I'm going to be sitting in a seat. I'm not going to be mobile. I'm going to be very mobile. The car is going to be mobile, but I'm going to be sitting still. I'm on a train for 3 or 4 days. I can walk up and down the aisle. I can go hit the dining car. I can go take a nap in the middle of the day. So I can still do the traveling, but to do it in a different way. And the other thing that I've got going on is, you know, I've done these 12-month studies where I go to a place in the wilderness. I visit it once or twice or three times a month. And I take photos. I do that 12 months out of the year. And then that's 12 months at Barkley Lake, 12 months at Lake Valhalla. But now, what I'm going to do is the same thing with the Olympic National Park, but because it's a national park, I can drive to the place instead of having to hike in 4 hours and go take photos. Yeah. It's like, you know, just have to accept the fact that sometime I'm going to drive to the parking lot and take a picture. Now, sometime I'm going to drive to the parking lot and then go for a long hike anyway. This time of year, it's going to be snowshoes and skis, but, you know, and it is that sort of thing. So as an indulgence to myself, what I'm going to do is, I have no idea how many more years I've got. I may have decades for all I know, but I'm going to do the locations that are like Hurricane Ridge now, because it's a mile up. It's 20 miles in, a mile high. Beautiful, high alpine stuff. But I also got to turn around because there's no place to stay there that night. The visitor center burned down and there was never a lodge. But in subsequent years, there are places like Lake Quinault Lodge, Lake Crescent Lodge. And I'm going, you know, that does not sound so bad. That does not sound like a chore to go to a lodge, stay there overnight, and then go take photos.
Yeah.
So it really is just accommodating. It's not totally turning everything off, but it is just finding another way to do things.
Yes, yes. And just so you all understand, Tom and I actually get along really well and have done things together over the years. And he is not inviting me to go on this trip because he has decided that I'm hardly worthy of on such a fascinating, interesting trip with him. But what he has noticed is that I never take pictures, and therefore it's a little hard for him to like have me as part of one of his 30 days trip of blah blah blah. Here is the book and all of the pictures. So I get voided out of things like that because of my non-interest.
No, it usually has the fact to do with, I'm doing this on the West Coast, and you're on the East Coast, dude.
Yeah, hey, and I should say, I mean, I like pictures. I'm not, like, against pictures, per se.
Yeah.
But, like, taking pictures. And I will explain to you exactly why I don't take pictures. It's really an interesting philosophical issue that I've had for many years, which is, as many of you know, and those of who don't know it yet will know it in a second here, I have spent a huge percentage of my life being an executive to major senior executives and CEOs of big companies and so forth around the world, as well as done speaking and things like that around the world. So I've been like everywhere around the world. And once when I started doing that and spending a lot of time in out of the way places, because my particular interest was always the places that people never go, because I really find the most interesting stuff to be to go in a completely out of the way jungle and visit the people there and find out where they're living and where I can stay and when I'm going through and what they're like and all that kind of stuff, rather than going to some fancy hotel or whatnot. And so what I also noticed was that I stopped taking pictures, because what I realized was that when you travel and you take pictures, you don't see stuff.
Right.
You take pictures. And I realized that I'm much more interested in the live experience of seeing the place and maybe having a chat with one of the local people I run into live and things like that. And I come out with amazing stories and amazing things that I use in speaking that I do and other kinds of things like that. And they are much more fun for me, much more entertaining for me than stopping and not seeing a place in the way that I can see it when I am there visiting it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm there with this thing in front of my face blocking my ability to see it in real life, because I'm seeing it in film life, which, you know, isn't really real life. Now, the way Tom does it, it actually is real life, because he's really good at taking these amazing pictures. He's a great photographer.
Thank you.
And he's really good at figuring out how to take those great pictures and turn them into one of his phenomenal books of that particular area that he was in when he took those pictures, like he just described to you, the one that he's going to now. And so in advance, what you should do is you should make a little note to yourself somewhere and remind yourself that sometime in the not terribly distant future from when he goes on this trip, which you will undoubtedly hear about in one of these talks, you know, pretty soon after the trip has happened, or maybe during the trip, that you should be watching for the book that will be titled Tom's Trip to Whatever. And you might want to get a copy of it, because it will be a very interesting overview of that territory that he just describe to you he is going to visit.
Well, and see, to me, it's an example of what you just described, which is the other way I'm going to typify this is accommodation. Because what I used to do is a very typical thing out in the Pacific Northwest, which was every weekend go on a different hike. Because you can, I mean, there's 52 hikes a year, and there are hundreds, if not thousands, of hikes around here. So you can. And, of course, most folks, you know, they got to mow the lawn sometimes, so you don't have it every single weekend and whatnot. And I realized I was running into this issue where I had hiked so much that trying to find a place I hadn't hiked to before was becoming more of a chore than the enjoyment of the hike. So there was one year in particular, and I think this is actually going to apply to some of the other stuff we're going to talk about, but one year in particular where I just went, look, last week I went to the Tianaway Basin. This week I'm just going to go to the Tianaway Basin. I don't care. It's going to be the same thing. I'm going to go to the same place. And I did that for a few weeks. And what I realized after a while was, well, for one thing, around here, the mountains close everything down for some months of the year. And I realized that I couldn't get all the way to the trailhead.
Mm.
And what I ended up doing was parking earlier, which of course makes sense. And then I found myself parking in a part of the valley that I'd always just driven through without ever looking at. Because I was driving, I was watching the road. Because you got to watch these roads. These are not paved. These are twisty, gravelly mountain roads. I thought,
yep.
This is actually a pretty... If they'd put the parking lot here, it'd be pretty. And I realized that the situations, the circumstances that were driving me nuts because I wasn't able to do what I'd been doing before opened up this opportunity to see things that I'd seen before but in a completely different way.
Yep.
And that's where this idea came from. Where it's like, okay, so 12 months at, for instance, Barkley Lake. Lake Valhalla is the second one of these books that I did. Lake Valhalla is on the Pacific Crest Trail. And it's also across the highway from a ski resort, so it's a fairly popular place. In the summertime, it gets Boy Scouts, it gets the people that are hiking from Canada to Mexico and things like that. But if you go there in the wintertime, of course, it's not going to be anybody else, usually. It's going to be snowshoes and skis. But I really learned the lesson in the shoulder seasons. Because you find out why folks don't go there in April. Because the lake is frozen more than it's thawed. And I realized that I had a perception of the place based on going there in the summertime. And I had a different reception based on going on in the wintertime. And it wasn't until I got there in the spring and in the fall, I kind of went, these fish do not see blue sky as much as they see ice. And it's that sort of thing where it's a simple idea, but just turning it a little bit instead of just visiting it and saying, here's what it's like. But the visit that as a whole year-long story, it was like, oh, this is for the nature that is here. It's a completely different experience than what we have.
Yep. Hey, I've got another little addition to this thought for you that what you just said made me think of, which is, well, actually, I first thought of it when you, a minute ago, when you mentioned your train trip versus some other way of getting to on this travel you're doing. And what occurred to me, relevant to my comment about not taking pictures so that you could enjoy the actual people and stuff that was there and whatnot, is that the part that I didn't mention that I should have, and I will now, is, and the train also has this capability, is that one of the things that happens if you're not taking pictures and all bound up in that kind of stuff that you just heard about from my partner of talking here is that on a train, for those of you that have never been on a train or never took advantage of what happens on a train, mm-hmm. let me put it that way.
Yeah.
For those of you, and for those of you who always take pictures and come back with a billion pictures but no actual memories of reality of the plate, what happens when you don't take pictures and you do the traveling the way I described is you have this wonderful thing that happens, which also sometimes happens on trains and actually also sometimes happens on airplanes, which is sometimes you get to meet the most interesting people mm-hmm. on the train or on the airplane who sit down next to you and start talking to you. And I have had the great, great fun of being in these out-of-the-way places, going off to see some sea planning session we were doing or something like that. And while I was getting there, which I would be doing typically if it was one of these long trips on an airplane, because they're too far to walk, is what I would discover is that someone would be sitting next to me and I would say hello to them because I'm like that. I'm very friendly and positive and think it's nice to say hello to people sitting next to me on a flight or a train or whatever. And I like to talk to people. I like to talk to me. And usually if I talk to them, that works. And they talk back. And often they start talking because they get the idea from me. And I have had just unbelievably amazing conversations with people, some number of whom have been exceedingly famous people that just happened to be sitting next to me on the train. And a couple of them have been big business executives. And when you're sitting like that and get talking, sooner or later, people always say, what do you actually do? Mm-hmm. You're an interesting person. What do you actually do? So I get to tell them a longer version of what I've just told you. I'm a consultant and an advisor to people that are CEOs of companies and starting companies and businesses of different kinds. And that's what I do. I help them build the companies and expand the companies and price things and all the stuff that you have to do to make it really successful. And some percentage of the people on the book have started talking to me when they ask me what I do. When I say have said that, they've said to me, oh, that is so interesting. I'm the CEO of this company in Washington State. Mm-hmm. And it's called blah blah blah, and tell me really what it's like, what you do. Tell me what you really do for people. Somebody that's really knowledgeable understands that what I gave you is the short, easy to give overview of something that actually has a lot more meat to it. Mm-hmm. And so I would explain to them in more detail some of my real expertise and some of the projects I've done, also for people that for the companies that are well known. And next thing I know, that person is telling me all about their company.
Well, and you know, the thing that gets me is if you're on...
free advice from me, because they're clever and they figured out that I must know a lot of stuff. So they ask me some questions, and I always answer their questions as a consultant for them. So whatever they ask me about their business, I give them advice about for them. Yeah, free advice. They just got a bunch of advice.
Well, and the thing that I like about it is the fact that you're not sitting beside somebody inside a noisy tube.
No.
And you're also not trapped inside a car where it's really only you. You're in an environment where it's much more casual. If there's a delay, I'm going back for a family thing. We're going to go visit a grave site. So, sorry, Steve, I'm not going to invite you to a grave site.
Okay.
But, you know, if I was to fly back this time of year, flying into Pittsburgh, there's a good chance there would be an interruption.
Mm-hmm.
Driving back, there'd be possibly interruptions, possibly getting stranded, or at least being stuck somewhere. And you don't know if you're going to be in a car, if you're going to be in a hotel, things like that. I'm on the train. I know there's going to be a delay. I'm expecting it to be a delay. It's Amtrak. I wish Amtrak had more budget, more priority. But in the meantime, I accept the fact that there's going to be a delay. It's going to be a delay in a place that I have a bed. And I've got power. And I've got heat. And there's a dining car. And there's a bar. Why would I be upset about that? And like you say, as you're talking to somebody now, you have a reason to talk to them. And it's also in a much more casual environment. I've had some fascinating conversations. Again, for me, it wasn't business related. It was just, you know, meeting people and hearing their stories. The thing I enjoy was the fact that because I was traveling in a way that isn't common, I'm meeting folks who aren't common.
Yeah. Yes. Yes.
And that just starts things off right there. And I look at what we're going into for this next year, because we're now in 2025. And this is going to be a really uncommon year. This is going to be a year to go find the folks that aren't the common ones, because I don't think we're going to find solutions by going, oh, well, we used to do this, so we should do that again.
Yeah, I'm with you. This is the, how are we now going to do this into the future?
Yeah.
And so,
I mean, I have to admit that I'm impressed with anybody that puts together a class, and I see lots of folks that put together classes. I've worked for nonprofits that have put together classes. And I have to admit, though, that, you know, January, you start to see all the new classes for the new year. You're seeing all the ads for them and things like that. And I'm kind of going, yeah, but so many of those curriculum were established based on the way the world was 20 years ago.
Hey, what you just said reminds me of another thing that I need to offer to people. As what happens if you go out and travel the way you and I have just been talking about, and especially my conversation I offered you briefly about talking to people, getting people on a plane to talk to you and tell them what you do and whatnot.
Yeah.
Another interesting thing happens, and for those of you that are in the business world or would like to be in the business world, I'm going to now offer you one of the best tricks I ever learned for getting new business unexpectedly. And I already gave you the trick. The trick is go on long airplane drives and sit on the airplane. And if you have the money to do it, or if you have the points on an airplane to do it, or whatever, sit in first class, because you're much more likely to be sitting next to a CEO of the company or some such thing if you're sitting in first class. Because I have gotten significant business by sitting in first class, talking to my neighbor, and in my favorite case, the guy got so engaged with what he was asking me about his business that we talked for this whole trip about his business, and I gave him advice and ideas about stuff he was asking me about. And as we got towards the end of the trip, he said to me, "What are you doing next week?" And I said, "I don't know. I'll have to look at the calendar and I'll see what I'm doing next week. I can't tell you off the top of my head. I don't remember." I said, "Why?" He said, "Because next week I am having all my senior executives from wherever they are around the country are going to come in for this big executives meeting that I'm doing, and I would like you to speak at it." And I just sort of freaked out at that a little bit and sort of laughed and said, "Oh, come on." And he said, "No," he said, "I'm absolutely serious." He said, "I love their conversation. I love everything you told me about my business and the whole thing. I can see that you know a lot of stuff about business world and speaking to people and all that kind of stuff. And I want somebody different and somebody that'll be clever and interesting and all of that stuff to talk to these people." And I said, "Okay, and what do you want me to talk about?" And he said, "Well, what I want to do is I'm going to have a chat with you, and you and I will have a talk, and I will tell you what I'm thinking about, and then the two of us we'll figure out what would be the best thing for you to talk about to my collection of senior executives in my company with what we do and what our circumstance is." I wanted them to get a different perspective, a different kind of advice, a different way of thinking about being senior executives in my company. I think they need to get just a change.
Right.
They need to get regenerated, you know?
Yep.
And I said, well, okay, well, that sounds really interesting. I would be happy to talk to you, and we'll see if we can make it work. I'll probably get Dave set up. And he said, okay, I'll tell you where it is, and, you know, you'll get a ticket. I'll send you a ticket so you can fly to where it is and stay there for the night and all that kind of stuff. And I said, okay, well, that's nice. He said, yeah. He said, and then we'll set it up, and I'll introduce you as my executive advisor person. It's going to talk to them about whatever we call the topic, and you'll have a lot of fun, and it'll be quite nice. And oh, by the way, since you're a professional and really know what you're doing, you'll get paid for doing that. What
right.
the heck?
Yep.
And I said, okay, now I'm pretty sure I'll figure out how to arrange that date to be available, even though I don't know what it is yet. I will figure that out. And so, son of a gun, if I didn't do that. And he actually had me do a couple of other things, too. It was great fun. And it introduced me to a couple of other people through the people mentioning to other people what had happened.
So
that way to get new clients is to have somebody who really enjoyed you a lot tell their friends who also are executives and need people like me that they met this great guy and they would like to introduce him because maybe there's something he can do for you too.
Well, and it gets back to that, like I was talking about, I think this year is going to require an awful lot of accommodation and not doing things the way they've always been done.
That's right.
And I think what that means, I've been talking to a number of folks about, I talk to a number of folks, we'll put it that way. But a lot of them are worried about whether it's the political climate or artificial intelligence or whatnot. And I'm recognizing that when we're walking into chaos, We're not walking in. We're being swept into chaos.
Yep.
What you need at a time like that is somebody who can help you figure out how to not necessarily navigate it, but Drew Campion, who's a very good writer, which is an understatement, and helped establish surf culture in the United States, said, life is a wave, ride it. And I think that's really going to be the case for the next year. And if you don't know how to ride that wave, then it isn't so much finding somebody. Well, what it really means is going finding somebody who can teach you how to surf. Because we're not going to be able to maintain the same old habits, the same old procedures, the same old conventions. Because this is now a very unconventional life. So I really think that a lot of folks I know, including business consultants, of course, but teachers and even therapists and counselors, you know, folks who are used to listening to somebody and saying, have you considered this?
Yeah.
Because, again, here I'm getting on a little bit of a soapbox, but I won't spend too long on it. I'm a firm believer that most folks actually already know what answers they need, and they frequently actually say them and they discount them, and you need somebody in the room that kind of goes, no, wait a minute, go back 30 seconds, because what you just said that you just kind of tossed off may be the very thing that you need. It's different than what you've done, but it's the case of, should I move? No, I'm never going to move. No, maybe you should. It's that sort of thing where your brain's already there. And really, it's a case of having somebody help you listen to yourself and break yourself out of habits and maybe make some new ones.
Nice.
Yeah, I thought so. I had to write that down somewhere.
Yeah, not bad.
Well, there's one translation of the Japanese word sensei. And so many times, sensei is taken as the teacher. And the translation I prefer, and I don't know if it's right because I'm not Japanese. I was not a native Japanese speaker. But it is the one who has gone before. The idea being that they do deserve respect, because whether through age, experience, or whatever, they've been there. It's not saying they have mastery, but sometimes all you need is somebody who's taken the two extra steps beyond where you are and just, you know, take advantage of the fact that they've blazed that much more of a trail and follow that.
Yep.
Oh, and by the way, just as an aside, in the midst of unintended consequences and all that sort of thing, and you never know what's going to happen, there's actually somebody now wants me to move to Japan because they want to possibly republish my books in Japan, in Japanese.
Oh, well, you know, I spent a lot of time in Japan.
I know you did.
Love being in Japan.
And I studied Japanese and worked with them as well.
Yes, and they have really interesting food and beautiful places to see and travel around and take pictures of. If you want to take pictures of a place and write a book about it, you can model.
But I'm not going to take the train to get to Japan. I'll take the train once I get there, but to get there, I'm pretty sure it's going to... Well, actually, I would... If I had the opportunity, the other thing I would consider doing for transoceanic flights is swapping them out for a ship. Because you can actually book container ships. You can book a room on a container ship.
Yeah.
And to me, that would be therapeutic. It's basically a retreat because, Lord knows, whoever's on board does not want to bother you. They're busy. They're trying to sail a ship. And you have an opportunity to just sort of, you know, it's going to be rough weather sometimes, but it's going to be rough weather in a cruise ship too.
Yeah.
But it's, again, it's that gaining that other perspective and taking life at a slightly different pace.
Yeah, especially these days when I feel like everything is moving 10 times faster than it actually can move.
Yeah. And it really has been a case of, well, I can't remember if we've ever discussed the digital singularity.
I don't remember either.
Yeah, the digital singularity, for those who, now that I brought it up, I should explain it. The digital singularity, basically, the consequence of it is that technology is going to continue accelerating, and at some point it accelerates so quickly that instead of things happening in decades like they used to happen, or years, like they used to happen, or months, like they've been happening recently, that things will keep happening, but in terms of weeks, potentially days, potentially hours.
Mm-hmm.
To the point that any course that you've put together doesn't make any sense. Any conventional wisdom is totally time to be rewritten. Everything changes so rapidly that you have to just continually be ready to change.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're at the cusp of that. The one measure I have for that is how long it took artificial intelligence to go from being a joke to being, oh, that's interesting, to, oh my God, what it can do now, to, I'm not sure if that was a human or a machine. And I think the next step is going to be, maybe I preferred the machine. It's actually the basis behind the book, the science fiction novel I wrote, which was, at some point, if society gets to the point where humans distrust humans so much that they may also distrust computers, but they distrust humans more. And if you think about it, we're kind of doing that because we're now trusting computers to drive cars. Not totally right now, but could be. We trust computers to handle banking. We trust computers to handle deliveries. We've turned over. How many times do you call up a company now and you actually talk to a person? You're almost always talking to a computer, and you may talk to a computer that will send you to another computer that eventually, if you get frustrated, may send you to a person.
Yes. You pretty much never talk to a person first time you talk to an entity when you call them up at a company or something.
And you know,
chance and company and getting people right off the bat and talking to them is really low.
So going on this trip, so I had to put in a hold mail thing for the U.S. Postal Service. And I figure, okay, I'll go online, just put in the request there. Okay, so I did that. I tried to do that. They had disabled my account for some reason, probably just because of inactivity.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so they don't have actually anything that says how to un-disable the account. So I sent them a help thing, and I'm still waiting for a response back. This is now several days ago. Yesterday, I was driving around, and I went, you know, there's a building up here that says post office on it. And I walked in, and there was a person, and there was a piece of yellow paper, and I filled out the piece of yellow paper, and I handed it to them. The computer's not always the fastest. Sometimes it still comes back to, and this is where I think humans are still going to be valuable, is the fact that businesses get sold on the idea that if everything's automated, it's cheaper. But from the user experience, the customer experience, frequently still the most adaptable thing is another human.
I have a live story that happened to me a few weeks ago. I have a Google phone.
Oh yeah.
which I got because my wife, who's knowledgeable about tech, when my phone needed to be replaced, said to me, you should get this because it's very state of the art and it has more stuff than you have, and I'll show you how to use some of that stuff, and so you can do more stuff. Now, I resisted, and then she convinced me, so I bought one, and then she did her best to explain to me how to use some of this tricky stuff, which one year or decade I'll learn how to use some more of it maybe. And so I got this thing, and in actual fact there's a lot about it that I do like. It does some neat things, and it does do nice phone calls and things like that, which is kind of nice for a phone to actually do nice phone calls.
Yep.
Now I'm going to tell you an interesting problem with this phone. Remember my comment, this is like the state-of-the-art, super genius phone that was created by this company, which is some huge, wealthy, super phone, super company in making these kinds of phones and similar kinds of gadgets, I assume. And it's filled with these genius people that actually know how to make this stuff and mm-hmm. build it and give it to you. So I have one. So there I am in my house trying to make a phone call, and it won't make a phone call. And then I'm thinking, okay, this is a little bit weird. I don't quite understand what's going on. And then somebody tried to call me, and I didn't get a call from them, but what I got was a note that they sent me. And the note said, Steve, I've tried to call you today about 5 times, and it doesn't get to your phone.
Right.
It won't get to the phone. It doesn't ring. It won't. So if you can do it, would you call me?
Yeah.
And I'm thinking to myself, oh, this is nuts. And so then I said, well, I'm going to see what else isn't working. So one of the things that I actually thought was kind of fun about the phone is that it has the capacity that if you just talk to the phone, it talks back.
Uh-huh.
And you can get things like what time it is, and it will tell you exactly what time it is wherever you are without you having to tell it where you are.
Yeah.
It knows how to figure that out.
Right.
It will tell you what the weather is.
Yeah.
Same thing.
Yeah.
also kind of cool if you want to know what the weather is in some place you've never been before and you're going there. They'll tell you, how cool is this? And I'm thinking, how nice. This actually has some great capability.
Oh, yeah. Technology does have its benefits.
And then I had some issue I had to deal with, and I tried to call up somebody to talk to them about it. And, of course, the phone didn't work. But this time, it didn't work in a worse way. It didn't make a phone call, but it also did some odd little things that I wasn't sure what they were. And what happened was, on the top of the screen, the four little white dots popped up.
Right.
And underneath those dots, it said, having a problem, let us know.
Cool.
That was their service to their customers if their phone has died. That's what they kept doing. There's no way to contact them.
Uh-huh.
There's no way to find out what actually happened or anything.
Right.
All you're told is, if you have a problem, type something in these three little dots.
Yeah.
And presumably they will tell you something. Now, what I can tell you is, I got this dot thing twice, and both times I filled in something along the lines of, look, this so-called genius phone of yours that I have doesn't work. There's no way for me to figure out what's wrong. There's no information from you as what to do or who to contact. I can't figure out anything. So I want you to know that you built a wonderful piece of garbage.
Right.
I really hate to say this, but I really feel that way, and I really feel that people like yourselves that are smart enough to design the damn thing and build the damn thing and all that should be smart enough to figure out, to have a way that it's possible for somebody who gets one of these ridiculously expensive gadgets and it breaks in not that long of a time and it's completely unusable because it won't do any of the things it's supposed to do. You ought to have a way to get somebody, a person to talk to, easier than three dots that don't do anything at all, except let you know that you sent them a message that there's a problem.
We're back to the episode that I had with American Telephone and Telegraph,
right?
Otherwise
right.
known as AT&T, where there's no way I was going to be able to send them a telegraph, but I had to start considering it because I couldn't contact them from telephone.
Wait to the rest of this story. So I'm looking at this and I'm thinking to myself, this is insane. This doesn't make any sense. This is just totally insane. So I said to Laura, my amazing wife, who happens to be pretty knowledgeable about technology, and I said to her, look what happened to this stupid phone. This phone you got me to buy. And she looked at it. And listen to my story. She looked at it and she said, yeah, it's really got a problem, doesn't it? I said, yeah. Good assessment. It's got a problem. Thank you. And then she said, well, just a second. She said, I'm not going to be able to fix this for you because I'm pretty sure I know what happened. And I'm going to tell you what happened and why I can't fix it. And I said, okay, well, that's kind of nice. It's kind of useless to me. But she said, no. She said, and I'll tell you what's going to happen about it actually going to be fixed at some point. I can't tell you how long it's going to take, but I can tell you I'm pretty sure it's going to happen. And I'm thinking, oh, well, that's really great. she's pretty sure that sooner or later, this ridiculously expensive device that I have that doesn't work at all to do what it's supposed to do, probably will be functional again.
Yep.
Well, that makes me feel really good about mine. So then I said, what are you talking about? She said, well, it's really interesting. She said, what happened? She looked at the phone a little bit. She knew enough to know how to look at the phone. She just isn't skilled enough to be able to fix the phone.
Sure.
And found out why. Because if she had any normal thing to fix, she could fix it for me. But it's not a normal thing. She said, well, what happened here is when they updated this phone, or when they built the phone in the first place, what they did is they built a super glitch into your system. And the glitch is screwing up the operation part of what actually makes this thing work.
Right.
Part that makes the call work, or not the part that you know will tell you what the weather is. It didn't screw those parts up. You can't get those parts because the rest of it's not working.
Mm-hmm.
But it screwed those parts up, and those parts, the only way those parts can be fixed is by the people who actually built the damn phone and understand the design and everything, because it's so sophisticated and so complicated that you can't take it to the company's service place and expect to get it fixed. They can't do it.
Right.
People aren't trained enough to know how to do that. And so I'm thinking to myself, this is really the height of stupidity of what's going on in the world of technology these days, right? And so I said, well, what does that mean? That's ridiculous. She said that, and I told her I sent my little message, and she said, yeah, and they didn't respond. And she said, yeah, of course they didn't respond, because they don't care. They figure you'll just figure that eventually they'll fix it. And I said, well, will they? She said, yeah, what they probably are doing is they're probably talking to the people that actually know what to do, and they're getting that group set up, and they might have already started, and those people were assigned, and somewhere in some dark room, there's some number of those people, and they're looking at not your specific phone, but a phone like yours. They're looking at it, and what they're doing is they're thinking about, what broke here? What did we do wrong? How can we rebuild it? How can we fix it? How can we get all that stuff done and get it into this person's and every other person that has the same problem? Because my assumption is lots of people have this problem, because there's lots of these phones out there, and they all were made by the same people and company in the same way, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I'm thinking, oh man, there's hundreds of people out there that are saying the same thing as me. What is wrong with you people that designed this thing? So anyway, so she said, so it's going to take a little while. We'll have to wait. So we'll wait and we'll watch, and I'll watch for you, and I'll let you know when they're working on it, because I'll be able to see that. So we wait like a week or something, or 10 days, and nothing's happening, and I'm getting more and more angry. And then finally she says to me, they're working on it. I said, how can you tell? She said, because I went into the system where I could get into the system, and I looked at a couple of things, and I saw what was happening inside the phone in a couple of places. And what I know is what those things say is that they've got their people that are now the heavy duty knowledge people. They're working on it because they know that they've got to get this fixed as fast as possible, because there's bunches of people that have the same problem. And I'm thinking, oh, okay. So, you know, like 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 weeks later, she comes to me and she's got my phone in her hand, and she says, here, look at this. And she holds the phone up, and she dials something on the phone, and she calls me on my phone, and it actually rings and says my name.
Yeah.
And I said, oh, you're a genius. Uh-huh. She said, yeah. She said, well, okay, now they got it so that it will actually call you and tell you your name and stuff. She said, we don't have any idea that they fixed anything else yet. And I said, oh, it's not like one fixes all. She said, not even close. This is like 100 fixes fix 100 things.
Right,
you know?
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, well, what do you think? She said, well, we can't do anything really. So what we'll do is we'll wait because they know that they're still working on it. They know it didn't fix. I mean, they will know when it's fixed, right? These are the experts. They will know when it's fixed. So what they're doing meanwhile is they're continuing to do whatever they're doing, and they're just working at a pace that enables them to do it as much as they could do at a time and get everything done, because it's a lot of stuff that has to be done by a bunch of people, right? I said, well, okay, I guess that makes me feel better knowing that eventually it will work. She said, yeah. She said, but I know some tricks, and I could do a couple things in the meantime that will make you happy. And I said, okay, tell me what will make me happy. And
that's a straight line.
and another straight line. I said, and I'm thinking to myself, oh, she's going to take me out for some really fancy date. That'll make me happy. No, that's not what she was thinking. Thinking was, she took my phone and she said, I'm going to do a little bit of work that I can do on your phone, and I'm going to get a couple of important things to work for you. But I can't get the whole thing to go, and I can't solve a couple of the problems that really irritate you the most. But at least I can make it so that you'll be able to make phone calls and get phone calls.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, okay, well, start. But how come you can do that? She said, because I'm actually really good at this, and I know lots of stuff. And what I need to do to get that to work for you has nothing to do with the basic construction of the phone and the basic technology that they used. It's like a sideway pass to that stuff. But all you need immediately is to make phone calls and get phone calls. Is that right? And I said, yeah, that's a good start. Although I would like to know the time, because that's kind of fun. I like calling up the time and having it tell me. And if there's any of those other little fun things that it tells me, any of those you can get to work. I like those too. The one that tells me the weather is kind of nice and useful. And so she said, all right, listen, I don't have enough time to screw around with all this now. Let's let it wait a while and see when it starts to work back again, and then I'll figure out if there's some more stuff that I can try and do for you. And I said, okay, fine. And so it took a while, and all of a sudden I could get phone calls and I could make phone calls, and it would tell me what time it was, and it would tell me what the date was. And so I was like, how cool. Because now I'm back in fancy super technology land, and it works. I'm like with it now. Like, I'm a hip dude, you know. I'm with the modern world's way of operating. I was pretty excited about it. I had gotten enough over the annoyed part and the cursing of the company part that I was pretty excited. The next day, it didn't work. And I said to her, I hate to say this. And she said, oh God. And then she went and she looked at it and she said, oh, they've been working on it, and there's something else that got messed up in whatever they're doing. And so now they're back in it and they're gonna fix the fix.
Well, that...
And I'm like, okay. He said, but this time I'm really pretty sure they'll get it right, because somewhere there's a big boss who's really furious about what's going on, because the big boss is not hearing from you because you can't get to him. But the big boss knows that you're going to send a really nasty note about them out to everybody that you can find to send it to.
And you've got 10 seconds to tell them that note. 10 seconds to tell them that note.
I said, and what's really amazing is, I said, yeah, as a matter of fact, in a couple of days, I'm going to be sharing that note verbally over my bazillions and my buddy's bazillions of followers in our webcast that we send out every week or two, and I'm going to describe this to them.
And with that, we're going to have to close this one off.
She said, great, that's great, because as soon as they hear that, they will make sure that they get everybody doing whatever they can do as fast as they can do it.
And with that, we'll conclude this episode of Intriguing Creativity.
Since then, it's been working fine.
That's good to hear. The other thing that's happening is we're running out of time real quick. So with that, this will be this episode, and maybe there'll be continuation next month.
Well, I hope that there was something useful for all of you in there. And please feel free to write us. Let us know. We love to hear from everybody, as you know. And it occurred to me, since I've been talking a bunch about, we've been talking a bunch about talking to people, and I've been talking about what I was doing in airplanes, talking to people and stuff, it occurred to me that maybe there's somebody out there that decided it might be fun to talk to me. It might or might not be. I'm not giving you a yes or no go on this, please, but you know, it could be. So if you think it would be fun, feel free to reach out to me, and I'd be happy to chat with you a little bit, because it's fun to hear from the people that listen to us, especially now that there's getting to be more and more of them. And you can listen on the big place that sends these things out, not just through our own place. And what's the big place called, please?
Spotify, so far. We'll hope to add other ones later.
And so that's the story of today, I think.
Yep.
That's our tip story.
Yep.
So thank you for listening. We greatly appreciate it. We greatly appreciate you telling your friends, of course. And, you know, enjoy this episode. Pass it around. Take advantage of the little hints that we gave about this and that and the other thing that might be helpful to you. And particularly the one about traveling in trains. And we will talk to you again. And you will hear from us again pretty soon. And thank you again.
Okay.
The person that's part of our team.
This is Tom Trembath and Steve Smolinski for Intriguing Creativity. We'll talk to y'all later. Bye-bye.
We will. Bye-bye.